Right, guys, welcome to The Pulse. You know, we do this every week, bringing in interesting people doing interesting things in all different fields. But this one's different for me. All right, so I know you're watching nationally, but for my Philly people, you know that we're different as it relates to football, as it relates to our teams, as it relates to our sports. So when they told me we could get Brian Westbrook in the building, it changed my whole presentation, man. I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I was trying to figure out, like I do on Sundays, I do the pregame show here. Okay. I was trying to figure out, am I wearing anything that looks too much like Dallas?
I don't know.
My colors, the Giants.
Those are Dallas colors and the Giants colors.
But so you got on blue.
Yeah, I know.
So it was okay.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of stuff you think about because we're different.
Yes.
Like
yes.
Philly's different. You notice that.
Philly is
career.
A little different, but they're passionate. There's love. Yeah. There's desire. We want to win. That's what Philly's all about. That's what I love about the city.
So normally when we're talking to people, we work backwards. So we kind of talk about their history and what have you. In this case, I want to start with the book.
Okay.
Because I think the book kind of talks about your history and your experiences. So you got a new book just out, The Mouse Who Played Football. Tell me about this. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, the book is some of my best work. Some of the things that I love the most about the book is actually what's happening in my life right now. And so when my co-author, Leslie Van Arsdal came to me and said, listen, I have a book idea. Let's talk about it. The book is basically around your life. Yeah. You know, let's talk about it. And being 42, having three kids, 9, 5, and 3, Bria, Brian, and Brielle. At this point in my life, I'm reading stories to the kids at night. I want those stories to have meaning. I want my kids to understand there is much more to life than playing and crayons and things like that. And so when she came to me with the book and the story and that was loosely based around me, there were so many things that I wanted to put in the book. There were so many opportunities in my life that to learn from for myself, and I wanted to share those with everyone. And so we came up with the book, and we're super excited to have it. So
loosely based on you. I mean, it's a mouse, so that's what it's kind of loosely based.
Yes.
But in a lot of ways, at least the message, it seems like, was kind of your career. All through your career, you're too small to do this.
That's right.
Is what they were telling you.
Well, yeah. So it started way back when I was started playing football and sports. They always said, you're the smallest guy on the team. You're too small to do this. You're too small to do that. You're only going to be this. And my coach back in high school simply said to me, and I know a lot of people have heard this, it doesn't matter the size of the dog in the fight. It's the matter of the size of the fight and the dog. Mm-hmm. How much do you want it? What's your desire? How hard are you willing to work for it? And when we wrote this book, it was simple. We wanted to make sure that our children, not just my children and Leslie boys, but everyone understands that don't allow someone else to dictate to you what you can achieve, what you're going to be. The only way that things should be dictated to you is you, yourself. What you have the opportunity to determine exactly what you're going to be in life, how you're going to do it, and how far you're going to go. You have that ability to do that. And so that's what we wanted the message to be in the book. The other part, and the biggest other message in the book is, listen, there are going to be strengths and weaknesses. Some people may perceive size, being a small person, being a mouse, as a weakness. I never looked at it that way. I looked at it as size being a strength. I had the ability to hide behind my offensive lineman. I had the ability to run the football. I also had the ability to catch the football out of the backfield. Some people thought that was a weakness. That was one of the things that I thought was a strength, and I was able to use that throughout my career.
Now, transitioning that kind of into life, because I love the message, and one of the things we focus on the show is how you use your voice for good and empower people or what have you. And now, you know, after a bunch of records in high school, college, and then the pros, you know, after Pro Bowl appearances, after 1,300-yard rushing, like, after all of that, it's easy to sit back and go, so your size doesn't limit you. We can go. Did you believe it all through that time? Because no disrespect, you're not a big football guy, obviously, in shape. But you're a little guy to be out there having 300-pound people fall on you.
Yeah.
You know, did you believe it even starting in high school?
Well, I'll tell you, it's hard to make a living. It's a hard way to make a living when you have guys like Dawkins and Jeremiah Trotter hitting you every single day. Yeah. I'm talking about big guys, 6'2", 6'3", 250-plus pounds. Many times I was outweighed and, of course, much smaller than a lot of different guys. But, yeah, I did believe it. And, again, that comes from internal. And we have the ability to control that. I tell my kids all the time, Only control the things and worry about the things that you can control. You can't control how tall you are. You can't control how much you weigh for the most part. What you can control is how hard you work. What you can control is how many times you're going to sacrifice to achieve your goal. You have the ability to control those things. And so those are the only things that I ever worried about. You know, and I always believed that my skill set, my ability to work really hard will take care of everything. And if I was good enough, then I'll have the opportunity to play in the NFL. And it worked out for me.
So you believe that going back, even NFL?
I did believe. And, you know, so when I was in high school, going into my senior year, I tore my ACL. Okay. So prior to that, I was being recruited by almost every school in the country to go play running back or cornerback and things like that. I tear my ACL in 1996, and then every school in the country, except for Villanova, said, we don't want you. We're not going to give you a scholarship. So Villanova was one of the schools that, in my mind, were the only one that recruited me. The only ones that said, we'll give you an opportunity to heal, number one, but also come back and play football again. And so I said, okay, Villanova is a great school. It's a great academic school. It's a great school that you can network after school. At that point, the NFL was not in my dreams. I wanted to find a way to be educated and then get a job. After a couple years at Villanova, things were working out and, you know, people began to start noticing the things that I was able to do on the football field. And then the opportunity in the NFL popped up because of some of the hard work and things that I learned while at Villanova. And it just worked out for me.
Was it motive? I went back and looked at your numbers, excuse me. And again, all of these different records as you were kind of going through this process. But then when it was time to go to the NFL, the you're too small in a lot of ways came back at you.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, and they third round pick, was that encouraging, motivating, or to some levels insulting, motivating? Because it's like, for real? Y'all didn't just see everything I just did.
Well, for me, it was insulting, motivating. It was kind of one of those things that you add another chip to your shoulder. Okay, they don't think I could do that. They don't think I could do this. Let me prove them wrong. I'll never forget, after breaking records, having the most yards in NCAA history in college, I went to the Senior Bowl, which is a collection of the best seniors in the country. You're talking about from Miami, Florida State, you know, Ohio State, some of the biggest schools in the country. And I practiced all week, little guy from Villanova, practicing hard against some of the best schools, best players in the country. And we get to the game day, and the running back coach, and I'll never forget this, I carried this with me throughout my NFL career. The running back coach comes to me and said, listen, people only think you can be a third down back. People only think that you can be a special teams player. So that's what we're going to play you in the All-Star game. Now, just imagine an All-Star game where everyone gets the opportunity to play. Everyone gets the opportunity to show what you can do. He's telling me you're only going to be limited to these things. And so I took that again as another insult. I took that again as another opportunity to add things, another chip to my shoulder, because I wanted to prove those people wrong. I thought of myself totally different. I thought of myself as someone that can contribute absolutely on every down in the NFL. And on special teams, not just being a third down back. And my goal throughout my career was to prove people wrong. And that was some of the things that I wanted to do. And I was able to do that in some parts of my career.
Yeah, you were able to do that. We can do that. It's Philly and national. We will own that. Am I right in reading that you were the first who did 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in college?
Yeah.
And they were still saying, go be a special teams player.
What's crazy is, so I did over 1,000 yards rushing, over 1,000 yards receiving in that season. I had 950 yards of return yards. So, I mean, when you think about it, on top of that, I had over 3,000 plus yards from scrimmage during that season. It was just a great, great opportunity, great year for me. But, yeah, they still were saying, hey, well, he's just a little guy from Villanova. He's still the mouse that played football. He's just still the small guy. And we're not going to take him serious. So, again, you're talking about adding things on your shoulder to prove people wrong. For me, I was always questioned. And that's one of the messages in the book. Yeah. It doesn't matter if people question you. They don't control your future. They don't control who you are and where you're going to go. You have the ability. Your own heart, what's inside of you, will determine that. And that's one of the things that I tell my children, but I also want to tell all the other children around. And Leslie tells her boys as well, that you control your future, not anyone else's thoughts.
You know what's interesting about that? And there's a lot of, and you do media too, and we'll get to that. We're talking before we started about the social media and all the messages out there. Everybody's got a don't give up message. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. everybody is talking about, and you know, half of them, their inspiration was be born rich.
Right.
But everybody was, don't give up, keep going.
Right.
Do you think that it helps that before the book, before the career, there's all those steps of you actually showing you did it,
yeah.
like you lived it. You're not just writing about it. We talked about the Senior Bowl, but then the Eagles draft you, and you still, you came in and it was grinding on special teams.
Yep.
You know, I think you threw a touchdown before you ran for one.
That's right.
You know, so do you think that helps? Like you're pointing to, I'm not just talking about this, I lived this.
Well, the examples that young people and old people like myself want to see is people that have actually done it. Don't tell me how to make $1 million if you don't even have $1 million yourself. You have a great idea. Well, show me how you've used this idea to help yourself. And so, listen, this book, the way that I speak is from experience. It's not something that I thought of. Something that this is truly something that I live. I've been doubted my entire life. You're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to be able to do that. You're too small. You're not fast enough. One of my recruiters, the guys that recruited me out of Villanova to come to the Eagles, I just talked to him recently. He said, listen, you were always hurt. You were slow. You were small. And he said, I still recruited you because I knew that you had the heart. And that was important to him. And again, it's about your heart. It's about what you want, your mindset and things like that. And so that continues to be my message. And that's something when you talk about when I came to the Eagles, Andy Reid, we had Deuce Daly here. Yeah. We had Dorsey Levins. We had Brian Mitchell. We had Karell Buckhalter. We had Rod Smart. He hate me from the XFL. All those guys were in front of me my rookie year. I'll never forget. I come into the room and I'm like, well, I'll never play because Deuce and Dorsey and B. Mitch and Buck, everyone is in front of me. And for me, I had to figure it out. How do you find a place in a position to play? How do you find time on the field? For me, it was special teams. Go play special teams. Get better at that. Go be good at something. And then maybe the offense will work out. And so I put all my time and energy into that. And it just proved how much I wanted to work. It proved how much I was willing to give up and sacrifice to make things work. And because I did that work on special teams, Andy Reid was able to see, oh, hey, maybe we can use some of his skills on offense. And maybe he can do some of these things for the offense. And when I had my opportunity, I was prepared. I had studied. I made sure that all the things that I can handle and control, I took care of. And when I got that opportunity, I was ready to go and things worked out.
I got to ask you about this because you just mentioned the guy who recruited you said you were slow.
Yes.
You were small. I thought, and I'm a fan, watched all the games, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, that guy's quick. Yeah. Like, hit the hole, explode. Like, yeah. Everyone's a home run hitter. Then I went back and looked at your 40 times when you were recruiting. You didn't run a good 40 times.
I didn't.
Like, at your size. Mm-hmm. So I need to give you a chance for the record. What happened?
Well, I'll tell you. So you have the combine. It was in Indianapolis at the time. Now, it was in the slow turf. Now, these young guys today are running on something that is totally different. Everyone's running a 4.3, 4.4. But back in the day, so when you run the 40, you're running. And I didn't know at the end, there's like a little piece of like fishing wire. Okay. At the end to signify when you're done. That's when they stop the clock. And so I'm running. You run two times. I'm running, and you run with your head down for the first 30 or so yards. Then you pick your head up. That's just a transition of your running. And when I put my head up, I see this fishing line. And I did this twice. And I was shocked, and I stopped both times, right? And I'll never forget this. I felt bad because people bring up that 4.5 all the time.
Now, like 4.58.
Yeah, that's slow, right?
Six.
So let me tell you, I came back at Villanova, ran the 40 again for my pro day, and ran a 4.38. So I'm much faster than a 4.5. But when you pull up Wikipedia, they're saying, hey, you ran a 4.8. I'll tell you this: there were rare times in NFL that I got caught from behind. So I'm proud of that. There were some times where some guys, I know D'Angelo Hall was a 4.2. He caught me from behind. I'll never forget that. I'm running, and me and Buck always laugh about it. Like, you were running as fast and as hard as you could, and D'Hall just walked you down. DeSean Jackson on one of my touchdowns. I mean, he's jogging, and he's running past me. And so, I mean, there's some fast guys in the NFL. For me, it was about my quickness, my ability to make people miss, and not take that big shot. That's what it was all about.
And in hindsight, we can joke about it.
Yeah.
You know, because you were there. That's and right. There weren't people who ran you down from behind. But I looked that number up and went,
yes,
there's something wrong.
Well, but here's the thing. When NFL scouts saw that, they were like, yep, not a first round pick, not a second round pick. And I don't know if he's going to be a third round pick. Maybe he can slide to the fourth round and I could pick you. Again, for me, that was adding chips to my shoulder. That was adding opportunities for me to overcome things. And, you know, unfortunately, in our world right now, our children, they're trying to avoid conflict. They're trying to avoid opportunities that don't always fall into their favor. I'm like, let's run to it. Let's solve this problem. Let's fix it. Let's find a way that we can use these problems as something that we can use as a stepping stone so that once we get over them, once we get over that adversity, those hurdles, now we can be very successful. And that's what my life has been all about. And that's what I think our young children need to understand. There's going to be adversity. There's going to be hurdles. And it's all about how you respond to that adversity. It's all about how you get over those hurdles. And once you get over it, now you've proved to yourself that, hey, anything that gets in my path, I can be successful. I just have to figure out a way to overcome those things. And that happens time in and time out in your life. When you're young, when you're middle-aged, and as you get older, that always is happening. And you just have to find a way to get over those hurdles.
I love we have on the show, particularly athletes, entertainers to some level as well. People hit 40 and start talking about their old.
I know. That's because when I woke up this morning, I'm like, oh, my knees, love, my back.
Man, that irritates those of us who have gotten, you're like, this dude, 40 years old, been in the NFL. Yeah. But on that theme, so you come in, you're playing the NFL. You do that at a really young age, in your 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through, and then at some point in your 30s, and the injuries do start to add
up.
Of course. At some point, and then it's done.
Yeah.
And you haven't hit 40 years old. Yeah. You know,
early 30s.
Yeah. And that part of your life is done. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that I don't think people get. I certainly don't get. What's that like? Because you're in front of the Eagles fans, which yep. is crazy. You've been overcoming these obstacles your entire life. You were the mouse who actually played football,
yep.
you know, and had the career. And then early 30s, it's done. And you have to face that next step.
Yeah.
You know, being old in yep. your early 30s. What's that like?
Well, you go through this thing called identity foreclosure. For so long, you have identified as an athlete. And for most of that time, a professional athlete, one of the best athletes in the world. Out of the 1,500 athletes, professionals, as far as playing football in the world, you're one of the better athletes. And so at the end of your career, you're like, this is what I'm known for. And now that's over. Now people are looking at you like, oh, that's the old guy that used to play football. That's how they look at you. So you go through this phase called identity foreclosure. And so that part of your career is over. And now you have to figure out what's next. What's the next thing that you want to do? What's the next thing that you can possibly be successful at? And for me, it was finding my wife. For me, it was getting married and then having children. I wanted to do that. That was something that I absolutely looked forward to. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm a father. I'm a businessman. I'm an author. And so for me, it's all about how can I do right now? How can I help to show my children the best path? How can I give them the best path for their life? And I'm super excited about that, this part of my life.
And I want to talk about that and transition to that. But it's another thing about being 33, 34, yes. 35, yeah. and a career is over. And we do this in media. You read about somebody signing this contract, right? And it's huge amounts of money to all of us who are sitting there. And it's all relative because it was huge amounts of money when you were doing it, but it wasn't huge like the kind of contracts they're
today's
selling today.
Contracts, yeah.
You know, so you still read about it. Do people miss, you know, I'm making up numbers, $10 million, which I'm going, oh my God, it's $10 million. But it's $10 million that stops coming in at age 30
of course.
Something. And that's if you're lucky enough and talented enough to be one of the ones mm-hmm. who gets that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that transition is tough because you're always the guy, you know, who had millions and millions of dollars. But at 33, 34, 35, you still have to figure out what you're going to do with the next 50, 60 years
yeah.
financially. And I'd imagine people are still going, yo, man, you hit me up.
Like yeah,
you,
of course.
You know, is that a challenge when you transition away from
it? Well, for me, it was not. Now, one of the things that, you know, I went to Villanova and I didn't think that I was going to be a millionaire by any stretch of the imagination. I figured that I was going to work my butt off for the next 40, 50 years after leaving college and just make a living for my family so that we can live comfortably. That was my goal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it happened a little bit differently for me. But when you talk about the money that you make in the NFL, millions of dollars every year, and for so many people, so many athletes, you're spending millions of dollars every year, right? And so the thought process has to change. If you're not making millions of dollars, then you better stop spending millions of dollars. You better figure out a way to budget your money, save your money, be smart about it, make good decisions. And so, unfortunately, so many NFL players, professional athletes say, okay, I'm making $10 million a year. I'm going to spend $1 million, right? And so, really, that $10 million quickly gets to $5 million right. after taxes. You spend a couple million dollars here and there, and here and there. You give away a couple million dollars. And really, at the end, you don't have very much money. Now, we're talking about millions of dollars, right? And so we're not right. in the real world, this is not, you know, this is a lot of doggone money. But for athletes, they spend it. We spend it all the time. You have to be smart with your money. You have to invest wisely. You have to also save for a rainy day. We'll never be in a position, most of us, to make millions of dollars again. We'll never be in that position again. So you have to make good decisions with your money. And so for me, because I went to Villanova, I was smart enough to save my money. I was smart enough to make good investments, understand that, listen, when I'm 35, I have to find a way to live from 35 to 85. I have to find a way to last those, you know, 50 years without making millions of dollars NFL type of money. And so I made good investments. I you know, I was smart. I saved my money. And, you know, when you have that type of leadership coming from your parents. For me, my parents always said, save your money. My mom is a penny pincher to today. She's clipping coupons right before I left home yesterday. And so, you know, it worked out for me. But for so many other players, they have to figure that out. And unfortunately, for a lot of the guys, they figure it out the wrong way. They figure it out after they spent all their money. And now they're like, hey, what do I do? How can I regain the wealth that I had? And unfortunately, it's a hard thing to do, almost impossible for many of the guys.
So you get it. As one of the guys, and it wasn't you, but you've seen it. Like, you've seen those stories.
I've received phone calls from guys that I even played against or played with, like, hey, man, can you throw me a couple $1,000? And I'm like, well, you played in the NFL for 10 years. You made, you know, you had a couple good contracts. Wow. Why is it that you have no money? And so I'm having these conversations like, listen, I have no problem helping you, but I don't want to give you money that you're going to run through. I want to help you earn money in a different way. How can I help you have sustainable money? How can I help find a way for you to make money for your future, not just give you a check today and you go blow it away? And so that's what the process is at this point. But it also is a process of, after you transition from your career, what's the next thing that you're going to do? Mm-hmm. How are you going to be successful? You cannot, I'll tell you, people like now, if you haven't made hundreds of millions of dollars, it's almost impossible for some of these guys to live outside of the sport. And it's sad because they have never stopped spending. Mm-hmm. When your income gets decreased, so does your spending. You have to figure that out. And so for so many of the guys, they never have done that.
That's a good segue, a good transition, because you are Brian Westbrook, the athlete, you're Brian Westbrook, the author, but you're Brian Westbrook, the entrepreneur and the businessman. Yeah. And part of what you're doing now that I was reading about is doing just that. Like, mm-hmm. you're helping athletes get involved in tech and get involved in, well, people, but athletes get involved in these other kind of businesses that can help sustain mm-hmm. them. And tell us about that part of your life.
Well, I'm a part of a group called the Underdog Venture Team. And it's really a branding company, but we have venture studio qualities. And so, you know, our company is really a branding company that goes out and helps other companies and other business people brand their business market. We help with your sponsorship. So we try to help bring partners to you so that you can make more money in your business. The other, when we talk about venture side, is we take startup companies and we want to help jumpstart them. We want to help those companies. And so in order for us to do that, we have to add value. We have to add money. Now, 66% of our startups will either be women-led or minority-led startups. So it's our focus to make sure that the companies, the people that normally have not been able to get the funding, yeah. normally have not been able to find people to invest in them, get that investment. Women, unfortunately, and people of color, for so many people, have not been investable people. I don't believe that. That's nonsense. And so for us, We want to help give them advisory. We want to help them strategically plan their business. We want to make sure that their business can be successful and sustainable for the long run. So that's one thing. The other part of our business is that we know every startup is going to need technical support, digital support as far as websites and things like that. You're going to need marketing. You're going to need event planning. You're going to need partnerships. So we're doing all that for all those startup companies. Now, the subsidiary that I'm leading in that effort is the Athlete Entrepreneur Network. Athlete Entrepreneur Network is very specific and direct. I want to help athletes transition from their sport into the next phase of their life. How can I help you go from making millions of dollars on the field to making millions of dollars off the field? And so part of that is a continual education. So we bring in the curriculum and career readiness to these athletes because, listen, when you've played football for 10 years, everything that I learned at Villanova when I retired, all of that was gone. It was all obsolete because so many of those things were technology based and things like that. Everything has changed in 10 years. And now I'm competing against guys and girls that have a 10-year head start from me. So we want to re-educate. So we're adding curriculum based for our athletes, former athletes, men and women. We're adding career readiness stuff. We're adding resume building. We're adding financial planning. We're trying to give our athletes the opportunity to be as successful as possible in their next career. And that's what this is all about for the Athlete Entrepreneur Network. How can we make sure that our athletes can be successful, just as successful in their next career as they were in their original career? And that's what we're trying to do.
We had here, I wonder if this is this a Philly thing? Is this a concerned athlete thing? Dawn Staley was on with us,
course.
Coach Staley.
Love Dawn, congrats.
She's doing great.
I remember she's at Temple, yeah, of course.
And was fighting for equality and opportunity, and now she's out there doing that for women and for people of color. Alvin Williams, who
Love
played,
Alvin.
Oh yeah, he was at Villanova.
I'm about to explain to you
who Alvin was. But he's doing the same thing. Like he has a business kind of coaching, helping people out. Do you think is that a Philly connection thing, like the brotherhood and sisterhood? Or is that just I'm a concerned person and I saw that and I know my brothers and sisters need help?
Well, I think it certainly is a Philly thing. And I mean, you know, Alvin obviously being a Nova grad, smart young man, just great, great at doing. And of course, Don, congratulations to her team, you know, national champions, things like that, and things she's been able to be accomplished throughout her career. I think there is a Philly connection there. But I also think as former athletes, all of us have seen the need. There's a need for that. There are some guys and girls that are out there struggling. They're trying to find their way. And sometimes they just need a helping hand. Sometimes they need someone to say, hey, let me point you in the right direction. Let me show you how you can be successful. We always tell the kids in my foundation that we want to show you the pathway to success. And not only show you that pathway, we want to give you access to that pathway. We want to give you access to open those doors to that pathway for success, because so many of our people have said, I can only envision myself doing things that I can see. Mm-hmm. So that means they're walking around life with blinders on. And I want to say, hey, we want to open those pathways up so that you can now see so many other options for you to be successful. That's the goal of our program, our Athlete Entrepreneur Network, but also is a goal of the Brian Westbrook Foundation. We want to open up those pathways for our young people so they can be successful. And if we can do that, now we have a community of people that were successful on the field, that are just as successful off the field, but also, not only that, they're also, you know, community minded enough to say, now I got to give back to someone else. Yeah. Someone else helped me. Now I have to give back to other people. And that's one of the bigger things as well.
You can tell you do media because I'm going down my list and Brian Westbrook Foundation, you know, coming to it and transition to that. But I was reading about that. You have the foundation. You had a horse farm?
I do have a horse farm in Maryland. Yeah. I do.
Okay. So tell us about the foundation. And that kind of speaks to you're opening up eyes for people to experience things they haven't otherwise experienced.
Well, listen, I bought my horse farm 17 years ago. So 2005, I go on a trail ride and I'm saying, I just enjoyed the trail ride. It was peaceful. I was in the middle of my career. I was stressed out because football is what have you done for me lately? You had a 100-yard game, then you had a 25-yard game, and then you suck because you only had 25 yards in that game. And so it's about what have you done for me lately? I go on this trail ride back in Maryland, And I lead that trail ride with a sense of peace. You're out in nature with an animal that you can't control other than the reins that you have in your hand. And you're out in nature. And for me, it was just peaceful. So I called my realtor and said, listen, I want to buy a horse farm. Now, I was young. I had a bunch of money. It wasn't the best investment that I possibly could, especially at the time. But she found a horse farm for me. We operated that horse farm for 12 years as a boarding facility. So if you didn't have a place to keep your horse at home, bring your horse to us and we'll take care of it. We did that for 12 years. In 2017, me and my wife were like, listen, we have a bigger calling on our life. We have a bigger calling on the horse farm. And so we kicked all the boarders out. They were upset. They were not happy with me, but the calling was pushing us. And so we said, we have to develop the Brian Westford Foundation. And we wanted to use a farm as a place where kids could come to and be renewed, be refreshed. And now our farm is 20 minutes outside of D.C. And when you think about D.C., really, really diverse community, but there's a lot of underrepresented minority kids that have never seen a horse, that never have been to a farm. And we wanted to give them the opportunity. Now, when we talk about the foundation, it was simple. We understand that 60% of our children will go on to college. So we want to take those kids and we want to push them as far as they possibly can through college and all those different things. So this year we started a data STEAM camp, an athletic data analytics STEAM camp, where you would go in and you'll see it all the time in sports. They're not hiring old football players. Now they're hiring people from MIT and Yale and Harvard that can look at the numbers and analyze them and spit back out whether you should go for it on fourth down or punt or throw a pass versus running. So we wanted to add to that. So we did that. We also had an agricultural data analytics camp. So for us, even at the farm, we try to understand, where do we seed? How do we seed? When do we seed? When do we seed our grass? How do we cultivate the best grass possible for our horses, things like that? So there are so many agricultural things. We talk about food deserts, even in communities here in Philadelphia and other cities, there's food deserts. How do our people, the underrepresented people, get produce instead of McDonald's? How do they find a way to make sure that we're sustainable and healthy with our food? That's agricultural data. We have to be able to study that. So we're introducing that to our children. That's one column. There's another column, and the other side is that, so 40% will not go to college. And unfortunately, so many people say, if you don't go to college, you can't be successful. I don't believe that. When you look at so many of the billionaires in our world, most of them haven't even gone to college. So you can be successful without going to college. So 40% of our communities don't go to college, right? Okay, period. Perfect. Let's find something for them to do. And so our goal with that 40% is introduce them to vocational skills. We want to give them the skills to be a carpenter, to be an electrician, to be a mechanic, to be as someone that, not, you don't have to ride a horse, but can you fix a fence? Can you cut the grass? You don't have to play football, but can you announce? Can you take care of the grass there? Can you help clean the stadium? Can you do those things? You have to have some type of skill. You don't have to go to college, but you got to find a job, right? We want to give them those types of skills. The other thing that we're doing here in Philadelphia, especially for those kids that are not going to college, is that in the construction world, they are lacking workers. It's crazy. I talked to one of my good friends, Greg, that he says, listen, I have 5 construction companies. It's hard for me to find young people that want to work just because they don't want to work outside. They don't want to work with their hands.
I was just at a camp 2 weeks ago where they were trying to train people.
It's crazy. So what we're doing here in Philadelphia is we're bringing the kids in. We're paying them. 18 years old, we're paying you. 17 years old, we're paying you to learn, to go to school, to get into construction. And as soon as you graduate, we are at that point giving you a real sustainable job. We're giving you a job that has great health benefits, that has great pay, so that you can work. So, I mean, we're not just talking about it. We're actually trying to live it. That's what the Brian Westford Foundation is. It's about empowering and giving our young people access to pathways so they can be successful. One last thing. Unfortunately, our children, our society says, you make $1 million, you're successful. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, I know people that made millions of dollars and are unsuccessful. How do you do that? Okay. Well, if you make $1 million and you spend $1,001,000, guess what? You're broke. However, if you make $50,000, you pay all your bills, you save $5,000 some way, you're successful. That is success. That's exactly what success is. And so we have to change the mindset of our people. We have to change the mindset of our community. If we're able to do that, slowly but surely, then we have a different community of empowered young people. We have different community of empowered people. And now that changes the world. And so we're trying to do our little piece here with the Brian Westbrook Foundation. And I didn't mention this, but 50% of the proceeds of the book will go directly to charity. And so as we sell the book and as we try to provide a legacy through the book in the words, we're saying, listen, we're going to do it in our pocket as well. So 50% of the proceeds of the book will go directly to charity to try to help our young people. That's what we're kind of on about.
I feel like we could keep talking about this, but the clock tells us that we can't. A couple of things that we'll go ahead and wrap up. And I appreciate you doing this. And I know that you're still, you do some media.
Yeah.
You have explored potentially doing more. You should, man. People need to hear your voice. I don't know what capacity, but people need to hear your voice. And I think the book is one step.
Yeah.
But the message, I think, resonates. So starting with that, people want to get the book. How do they do that?
They can go to Amazon and purchase the book there. We've heard recently that Amazon has sold out, but I know they got some more copies back in. So you absolutely can go to Amazon. Amazon, they have the ability to get you the book the same day, the next day. If you can't find it at Amazon, we're also in Barnes & Noble's as well as Temple Press. And so you have the ability to find the book. It's out there. My co-author Leslie Van Arsdale has just done a great job of helping me put this thing together. It's a great book, has a great message. It also, you know, as I raise my kids, it's about those conversations. There's some conversational pieces in there. There's some pieces that the young people probably don't understand. Big Red, who is that guy? Yeah. That's Andy Reid. So now I have to have a conversation with my kids about who Big Red is. They want to know who Big Red is. Okay. Conversations, communication with our young people. The only way that they learn is through that conversation, that communication. That's what we wanted to promote, and that's something that I think is super special about our book here.
Children's book, but if you go through it, adults, especially football fans, you will see a bunch of things in the book. You go, oh, okay, I remember that. But that's a Super Bowl score. All that kind of stuff is spread throughout the book. We end the show, and we've been doing this the entire show, but we went end every show with Use Your Voice for Good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's your foundation, if it's just a message you want to give to young people, kind of your last word as to how you're using your voice for good.
Well, you know, I think using your voice is not a one-time thing. I think it's a continual thing. I think the message for all of our young people is very simple. Believe in yourself. Don't allow anyone else to determine your future. You have the ability to determine your future. That's not necessarily determined where you start. You can start from humble beginnings, but you can become very, very successful. And that's what this world is about. You have opportunity. Seek out those opportunities and find a way to be successful. Don't allow your humble beginnings to slow you down and make you think in your mind that you can't be successful. You can be super successful no matter where you start at. All you have to do is find your way, hustle, work, grind. Our young people, unfortunately, they're afraid of grinding. Get dirty, get in the weeds, grind. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to do that, you can be successful in this world. And if I can help you in any way, please let us know.
We're going to leave it there. But I've never done this, but I'm going to do it today. They tell me you're not supposed to do this because, you know, this is unprofessional. I want people to know. I got my Westbrook jersey right here. As we wrap up, you signed my jersey
for me. Absolutely, of course.
We figure it out. People are going to say, oh, he signed. Now you got to use it for charity. You can't keep it yourself. We get another one signed. But thank you. I appreciate you coming. Appreciate your message. Wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I end by just saying, wow? Like, I expected to enjoy sitting down with Brian Westbrook, but part of that was because, if I'm honest, I'm a little bit of a fanboy for Philadelphia sports, born and raised in Philadelphia. But above and beyond all of his success as an athlete and a Philadelphia Eagle, he was just a genuinely good guy who seems concerned about communities and helping other athletes take the next step, inner city young people get the opportunities that perhaps he didn't have as a young person and they hadn't had previously. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I encourage you all to pick up a copy of his book. It's available all places. Your kids will enjoy it. You will enjoy it. So thank you so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to The Pulse with Bill Anderson so you'll get a notification every week when we have a new show available. If you're ever in Philly and want to watch the show on TV, we're on Fox 29 at 6:30 on Monday evenings. Of course, nationally, 9 p.m. Mondays on Fox Soul, and all the shows are available to stream online. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back to do it all again next week. We end this week, as we always do, reminding you that whenever you can, use your voice for good, and have a good one.